The worst war in the history of life on Earth, hands down, was World War II. The nation that suffered the greatest casualties during that war, hands down, was the Soviet Union. Ironically, it was our ally because Hitler was our enemy and their enemy. And an interesting aspect of World War II in the Red Army were the role of snipers, including female snipers. And there's a new novel, warning, it has occasional bad language, but it's got a fascinating story, and we're going to talk with the author of that. He's a best-selling author and even a Pulitzer Prize winner, as I understand it. His name is Stephen Hunter. The name of his book is Sniper's Honor. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Jerry. I'm very pleased with your interest.
Sure. And I tell you something. I read a book about Stalingrad about a year ago, and if nothing else, it was like, this is horrible. How could anything be worse than Stalingrad? And ever since I read that book, I thought, you know, anytime I complain about anything in life, I think, well, I could be at Stalingrad, and it could be worse.
That's a very good point. And I think one of the ideas behind this book, not to give myself too much credit for being high-minded, was that I wanted to be part of the process of remembering these the war itself, and particularly the war on the Eastern Front, was an immense struggle. I mean, it was cataclysm, it was Armageddon, it was vast armies fighting to the death, and anyone who came between them or who was a member of them, those people died literally in the millions. And I don't know, it's something we've really forgotten in this country if we knew it to begin with. And one of the ideas here was to kind of look back at that and remember and appreciate and understand how it shaped the world today that we live in. And it still has ramifications even as we talk.
All right, let me quote your book here. This is on page 70. 6 months in infantry battle in Stalingrad had taught her lessons. The her is the protagonist of sorts. I guess there's two main protagonists. Anyway, she identified the spastic ripping of the German machine guns, the slightly slower firing rounds of the machine pistols, and the abrupt shear of light, pressure, and concussion from the M24s detonating at the end of their long tumble from hand to target. The Germans were well-positioned, heavily armed, and had no need to conserve ammunition. This was a total murder ambush, nothing delicate. They were here to kill everyone, kill the horses, kill the dogs, period. They were merciless.
That was what that war was. I mean, you could look at Stalingrad. I chose to focus on a battle that was a little bit later called Kursk, which was is generally considered the largest tank battle in history, and it involved two vast tank armies fighting each other in a huge, empty, featureless plain as mainly, you know, Ukrainian wheat fields, and just fighting for 24 hours solid. In the end, over 800 tanks were destroyed. Thousands and thousands of men were destroyed. Mm. It was, I hope my feeble imaginative and descriptive skills were up to it, but nothing could be up to it. I mean, you can only capture a wisp or a fragment of a suggestion of what it must have actually been like. And I, as I say, one of the things I tried to do was to try and be accurate about the war, and I didn't want it to become, you know, a commando movie or anything like that. I wanted it to sort of be honest about the incredible strain and the grind and the crushing daily reality of it, and I tried to capture that.
Hmm. Well, and you really did, and I have to admit, I have not been able to finish the book yet, but it really is quite a page-turner. Now, let me ask you a question. Are the main characters all fictitious, but then loosely based on somebody, perhaps?
Well, they're more like, I would call them composites. Bob Lee Swagger, the hero I've written about, he was originally inspired many years ago by a former Marine sniper in Vietnam named Carlos Hathcock, and I found him very interesting. The second character in the book is Kathy Riley of the Washington Post. She's actually not a composite. She's a real person. That's very close reading of my very good friend Kathy Lally, who is the Moscow correspondent of the Washington Post, and whom I've known for 30 years in on two newspapers. And then finally, the Soviet heroine, Millie Petrova, she's a composite. She just simply represents what those women. There were about 20,000 of them who were used as snipers. They created havoc in the German lines. They were extremely efficient. They were extremely brave. And they also had very, very high casualties. So they were, no one loathes Joseph Stalin more than I do. And all this had to happen because he was a completely irresponsible idiot in the way he handled the war in the first few months. But that being said, you still have to admire the unbelievable willingness to sacrifice and fight and kill that this generation of women showed, you know, in that colossal battle of battles that was World War II in the East.
So while America had Rosie the Riveter, the Soviet Union had Millie the Sniper.
That's exactly right.
Now, you said 20,000? 20,000 female snipers?
I think that's the number of casualties that they inflicted on the, on the Germans. I think it was more like 4,000. Even as I said that, I realized I was going through an early morning old man moment, and I need more coffee. But
yeah,
there were about 4,000 of them, and they killed about 20,000 Germans.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I like about the sniper as a figure, I've written so many books about snipers, is that they sort of express the reality of the war. We don't talk too much about that, but what war is really about is killing the enemy. And these were people who took upon themselves that responsibility and lived with whatever it cost them psychologically for the rest of their lives if they survived. And that, it seemed to me, was a very interesting dynamic. It was much more interesting to me than leadership or, strategic bombing or anything of that nature. It was explicit and naked and exactly the essence of a certain kind of reality.
All right, we're talking right now with Stephen Hunter. He's the author of a book called Sniper's Honor, and it's basically taking place, most of it is taking place in the Soviet Union during the 1940s, where they're trying to drive out the German army from there. And let me ask you a question. What was the catalyst for this particular novel? I realize you've written about other sniper-type novels and so forth, but what was the catalyst for this? Snipers from the Soviet Union.
This is actually a book that rose from the ashes of a failed book. I had come up with a plot that would take Bob Lee Swagger to Israel and have him working with Israeli military intelligence searching for an enemy, a Hamas or a Hezbollah sniper.
Wow.
And by certain machinery of the plot, that sniper had to be a woman. And it just turned out that I couldn't do that book. I never believed in it. I couldn't quite make it work. There were some technical problems. There were travel problems. And at a certain point, I lost my enthusiasm, and you can't do this kind of work unless you're feeling very enthusiastic. When I told them at my publisher, Simon & Schuster, I was surprised at how disappointed they were. And I asked my editor, what is it about that book that you like so much? And she said, well, we were all intrigued by the concept of the female sniper. We thought that sounded like a great character. And I said, well, there's really only one case in history where large numbers of female snipers were deployed, and that was in World War II in the Soviet Union on the Eastern Front. Would you want me to write a book about that? They actually were kind of scared. That didn't sound to them like much. And she said, well, why don't you split it so that it's Bob Lee Swagger investigating something that's going on that happened in World War II? And I thought that was a terrific idea. And I sat down and I tried to work out an outline that would sort of cover all the stages, would cover all the elements that I've mentioned before. And I just had a great time. I mean, it's terrible to say this, but World War II for a novelist remains just an incredible dramatic challenge and imaginative provocation. And you sort of get burned out on writing books, and what you need desperately to continue is a big jolt of provocation to your imagination, and I got it from the Eastern Front. I mean, it was just such a spectacle, such a tragedy, such a folly, but also such an example of what humans can do when they decide to, what ordeals they can survive,
right.
what the values of commitment and sacrifice and discipline and unquenchable will can accomplish. And so dealing with all those matters was just great fun for me.
Well, even in the opening, you start with this example where there's this German sniper who's just waiting at Stalingrad over a period of, I believe it's something like 3 days, and then when he finally does his shooting, then he's shot right back, and boom, he gets injured, and he's one of the lucky ones. He gets medevaced out of Stalingrad, and boy, that's true. I happen to know the context about Stalingrad. For example, one of the major armies of the Germans that were finally trapped, and they finally, the remnants of it surrendered, I think they started with something like 300,000 soldiers. 91,000 Germans from the 6th Army finally surrendered in early February 1943. And then I did a little research on the internet and found that only 6,000 eventually returned to Germany. So 91,000 surrendered, 6,000 eventually returned, in some cases, long after the war. So, I mean, this is just a horrible scenario on both sides.
It was just appalling, and you're exactly right. Unlike in the West, when you surrendered, you didn't go to a POW camp and suddenly start getting 3 squares a day. The Russians treated the German prisoners, and the German treated the Russian prisoners with absolute contempt, more as a logistics problem than a human drama, and felt no responsibility to provide food or medicine or shelter or anything. And those poor men died in the thousands. And when the war was over, they were not released. They were released over many years, some as late as 10 and 15 years after the war, when they came, you know, and they were just, when they were released in Siberia, they were just like, okay, Hans, you're done. Go home. And poor Hans, it was on him to walk 6,000 miles to get home. I mean, it was a terrible human tragedy, and it was just partially because of the ruthlessness of dictatorial regimes, and partially because the logistics were just too immense to solve, and there wasn't enough money or resources to give people railway tickets. So they weren't so much they weren't released. They were decaptured, and the nobody took any responsibility for getting them back home. It was just a nightmare. It was a mess.
Yeah, and you think about the context. I mean, ultimately, it's all Hitler's fault, because here he made this deal with Stalin in 1939. By the way, I happen to know a lot about the ACLU, and I don't agree with them on the social issues and there's religious liberty and so forth. But interestingly, the founder of the ACLU said at one point, communism is the goal. And yet, when Stalin and Hitler made their agreements in 1939, which ultimately led to World War II, you know, with the invasion of Poland and so forth, Roger Baldwin, the founder of the ACLU, said, oh, that's it. And the scales fell off his eyes as far as Stalin and communism and so forth. And they even purged in the top leadership of the ACLU for a couple of years there. They purged the communist members. Then later they were reinstated, in some cases posthumously, in the 1960s. But it's interesting. But anyway, bottom line is Hitler outfoxed Stalin and surprised Stalin by invading the Soviet Union in June 1941, but it turned out to be a total disaster and failure and just awful devastation on life. But of course, the first several months, they were victorious. Now, these female snipers, tell me a little bit more about their history. Where did they first start arising in the World War II conflict here?
Well, they were a direct result of the process that you just briefly touched on, and that is Stalin's extraordinary incompetence in and before World War II. And he was literally taken by total surprise when Hitler turned on him.
Yeah.
He couldn't believe that such a thing. He was a man of unquenchable ego and sense of self-aggrandizement and self-worth. And one of the consequences of that was that the Russian defenses just crumbled, and the Russians began to retreat, and the Germans just drove through Russia in the early years of the war,
yeah,
like sauce through a goose. And there were vast battles, all of which the Russians lost. There were huge losses of men and material and territory, and frankly, a democratic leader could not have survived the incompetence and the ridiculousness of Stalin's war effort. They should have arrested him and shot him. But they were afraid to, because he had such a security state in mind. And eventually the Germans overextended themselves. Eventually, with our help, the Russians rebuilt their industrial base. And at a certain point, they were running desperately low on men. And that's when they began to open up the combat ranks to females. And through the last 2 years of the war, the Soviet Army was fairly well integrated. And the sniper's job was a natural for women, because there's no particular gender advantage to being a male when it comes to shooting accuracy. It's not about strength. It's more about will and willingness to practice.
And patience. Help. And patience.
Patience.
Yeah, these people they would be fixed on a target and just wait, in some cases, for hours, apparently.
That is exactly right. And so they trained hastily and put into battle hastily a great many female snipers. And as I say, the women did very, very well. It turned out, that they had the attributes that make an excellent sniper. And I don't think they all did, but many of them did. And there were several of them that had over, 300 kills and really devastated the Germans. And it was a terrible war, because they knew if they were captured, they'd be executed immediately. So they had no, it was fight to the death. There were no options. You either won or you died. And,
right.
The war used up thousands of them, and some were better than others. This is true of all human performance profiles. But they were extraordinarily brave and extraordinarily resourceful. And I felt, as a writer, that this was a figure that we should look at in popular culture. I mean, there had never been a book that played explicitly with this Russian female sniper, and I thought that, A, people should know about it, but B, that people would enjoy learning about it, and C, it would be great fun to write and research, and the three of those things made writing the book a great deal of fun.
Huh. Well, okay, let me ask you this. Did I not read, I think I did, in your book, talking about Stalin's incompetence and also the fear that he engendered on his own people, didn't he depose more than 200 generals or something on his own army during the war?
He did more than depose them. He executed them. The figure is generally considered to be 251.
Wow.
And again, the penalty
generals
for failure was very, very high. There were all kinds of terrible, in our country, we executed one man for desertion, and that was a guy named Eddie Slovak. And it was a massive trauma for everyone. And Eddie Slovak was offered many chances to avoid his own execution because nobody wanted to do it. He kept saying to him, Eddie, just agree to go back to the front lines. They'll find you a cushy job. But he just was not going to go back. He was just too devastated by the combat he'd already been in. And finally, reluctantly, he was executed. Well, on the Soviet side in World War II, they gave NKVD, Stalin had something called, Statement 51, and it gave NKVD, that is security, internal security forces,
like the KGB,
the right to execute cowards on the battlefield. So if, you know, if you were retreating and the NKVD officer didn't like that, he could shoot you on the spot legally.
Wow.
And that, of course, that was to drive the troops forward regardless. And at the same time, during many of the assaults, the Russians would bring in NKVD battalions behind the attacking troops, and their job, their mission, was to shoot their own people if they started to retreat. So it was a war fought under the most ruthless totalitarian conditions you can imagine. I mean, there's nothing like it even imaginable in the Western democracies.
Right. Well, for example, Stalingrad, going back to that, there was his policy of, quote-unquote, Stalin had a policy of not one step back. In other words, meaning don't retreat, just stay there, stand your ground, you know, even if you get killed. But it was at Stalingrad that policy was put into place even more so. And yet in that case, in Stalingrad, the Red Army was able to finally be victorious, mainly because of the, you know, the freezing winter, the Germans didn't get enough fuel, and it was just a horrible, horrible disaster. And of course, Stalingrad is where your novel opens up.
Yes, that's true, Jerry. And the horror of the war can't be overstated.
I agree.
It was equally awful on the other side. You talked about Stalingrad. One of the reasons that army, General von Paulus's army, surrendered and was surrounded and surrendered was because exactly in the same way Hitler had a one step, not one step backward.
Right.
And policy. And they knew that they were going to be cut off, and they knew that once they were cut off, they would be starved out and they would be bled out. And still, out of pride, not out of military sensibility, Hitler forbade them to withdraw, and thus he doomed 300,000 of his own men, who had really done nothing but follow his orders and fight with incredible intensity and energy for the previous year and a half. And yet they were the ones he punished for his own stupidity. And it just is, I mean, the one thing you see in the war on both sides in the East is evil in human form given full flower.
Yeah. All right, here's a quote from your book, page 77. This is one of the Russian characters describing the Germans. Extremely skilled. They have the best warcraft in the world and routinely kill us 5-1 in any engagement. They have better equipment, smarter officers, more creative soldiers. We only beat them by sheer force of numbers. If they kill us 5-1, we come at them 6-1 or 10-1, and in the end shall prevail because, all things being equal, we can outbleed them. We can out-sacrifice them. We can out-grieve them. We can clear minefields after all. I'm sorry, we clear minefields after all by marching through them. Again, a quote from your own book, Sniper's Honor. Your comment on that? I mean, I think it gives us a taste of that brutality you've just been talking about.
That's exactly right. It's Millie speaking, and I wanted her, one of her roles in the book is to be honest about the war. She's not a propaganda spouter. She's not particularly enamored of Stalin. She understands the reality of what's going on, and so she functions as someone who is a witness rather than a propagandist. And I felt that was a fairly good summary of the reality of the war. I will say that where she says, "We clear minefields after all by marching through them," that's actually a quote from Marshal Zhukov. And if you want to get picky about it, he didn't say that. He said that to Dwight Eisenhower in 1945. So those words hadn't been formulated when I have her speak them. But, you know, I think it was okay to do a little cheating on that particular issue.
Okay, now, I did a little research on the Internet as far as female snipers during World War II because of your novel and so forth in the Red Army. And I saw that one of the prize ones had more than 300 people that she was able to kill, Germans that she was able to kill. And she survived the war. And the interesting thing is I noticed that the date that by the time she died at the age of 58. And that seems pretty young. Now, maybe in the Soviet Union, that was an average age for a woman. I don't know. But any comments about that? I mean, did some of these people die young, maybe because of all the stress of the war?
Well, I think that's probably true. I don't know if any studies have been done that would document it, but it certainly seems intuitively correct. The Russians did, I will say this, understand the propaganda of the female snipers, and several of them were turned into celebrities. And one, in fact, toured America after her operation. She'd been wounded. She had over 300 kills. And she toured America, and, she met President Roosevelt.
Yeah,
she went
that's
to the Winchester
one.
Plant. She was presented a Winchester rifle. She went back to the Soviet Union, became a sniper instructor, and the ironic thing is she was no farm girl. She was a history graduate student when the war broke out. She ended up as a historian on the staff of the Red Army and lived a very full and, complete life. Whether she died a few years earlier because of the stresses and the incredible strain that the war put on her, I don't know. It certainly sounds as if it could have been. But as I say, I don't think research has progressed to that point yet.
Okay, we have about a minute left to go. What would you like to say that we haven't covered?
I feel like we've made the point that the book it sounds like a history book, and it should. I would like to tell your listeners that it's really a thriller, and it's set in two time frames. Bob Lee Swagger is investigating the loss of Millie Petrova in contemporary Ukraine, and when he does that, people suddenly try and start to kill him. And then we cut from that story back to 1944 and see what really happened in the Soviet Union, in the war, in Ukraine in 1944. And I think, and the way it's designed, and readers will have to tell me if it's successful, the two narratives play off each other. They're almost as if they're in dialogue. Questions are raised in one, then they're answered in the other, and then the other answers ask questions, and then those are answered in, it's a back and forth. It's like a tennis match between the two narratives. And I think you'll learn a heck of a lot. I think you'll enjoy the book. But it's primarily a book of entertainment. And I hope that you'll be able to say when you're done with it, wow, I couldn't put that one down.
Yeah, good. All right. Hey, thank you so much for being with us. And we enjoyed your book. And again, I do have to, mention there is occasional bad language. Fascinating story. I trust you hope someday a movie will be made of this.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, and you used to be a movie critic, right, with the Washington Post?
For too many years. I don't even like to remember those days.
Didn't you win a Pulitzer Prize one time?
I did, in fact, win the Pulitzer Prize for the Washington Post in 2003.
What was the particular movie?
The movie criticism was very good to me.
What was the movie you criticized or you reviewed?
Well, I criticized all movies.
Oh, okay.
I was full of opinions. I knew exactly what everybody was doing wrong.
All right. Hey, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Appreciate your
thank
time.
Thank you, Jerry.
All right. Thank you now. Bye-bye. You too. All right. That was Stephen Hunter. Again, the name of a book called Sniper's Honor. World War II is absolutely fascinating. And I'll tell you, when you look at the value of human life, or rather the disvaluing of human life, both under Stalin and Hitler, both believing, frankly, in lies from the devil, as far as I'm concerned, as far as, man not having real value because man is not made in the image of God. Instead, we're just accidental products of time and chance and so forth. And bottom line is evolution and the whole communist perspective was one of godlessness. And Hitler had the same mentality, same view, building everything on a socialistic future And it was really quite bleak. But when you put the two together, that is the Red Army with Hitler's army, man, there's just no respect for human life. It's just not there. How different with the American experiment, where our founding fathers said that our rights come from God. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal and are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. And among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I'll tell you what, I thank God that I'm an American, and I'm thankful that I'm not at Stalingrad. Anyway, you might enjoy that book quite a bit by, again, our guest, Stephen Hunter, Sniper's Honor. This is Jerry Newcomb. God bless you. We'll see you next time on Vocal Point.